Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. Let me see. Phones are not open yet. We'll open the phone lines after the top of the hour news. And if you want to jot the number down, it's 541-472-1270. And as soon as you hear the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you hear your question or comment to our guest. Our guest today from the Josephine County Commissioners, we do not have a quorum this morning. We have Commissioner Ron Smith in studio with us. And Ron, once again, thank you very much for joining us. We miss your other two commissioners. They're certainly welcome here anytime. Well, any scheduled time, at any rate. But Ron, step right up. What are you dealing with right now as a county commissioner? What are your constituents telling you?
Well, my biggest thing right now, Chuck, is economy, mm-hmm. jobs. We have an opportunity, you know, about the North Valley Industrial Park. Okay, so there's some businesses up there. I'm not going to name names, but they want to expand, increase some job opportunities for people in Josephine County. But our challenge now is that the wastewater treatment plant is at capacity. Give a little background on this. The North Valley High School has a treatment plant for their wastewater, and then the two, Fleming and the other elementary school, have a treatment for their wastewater plant. On that wastewater plant is the industrial park is hooked into that wastewater treatment plant. So for us to expand at the industrial park, we need to address that problem of the capacity for that system. So we're working with the Three Rivers School District to solve that problem. And eventually the county is going to take that wastewater treatment over. And I think that's a big plus for us when we do that. But it's a little challenging.
Well, I understand it's challenging. And eventually you're going to take it over. Where does that leave the school district? And what are we talking about in terms of cost?
Well, that's a good question. That's the big
it's
question.
It's my
right
job.
is the cost. Mm-hmm. We just had an engineer do a survey of it. So we haven't heard back from that engineer's report. The challenge is that the system there at Fleming is not at capacity for inflow. It's at capacity for being able to get rid of the wastewater. And the problem is the wastewater that comes out of that treatment plant is not what they call in the industry grade A, which means they cannot put it on their ball fields. So they're watering the ball fields at those elementary and middle school out of their wells. And we just recently did piping to eventually put the airport on that system. But my big thing right now is making sure that those people that want to expand will be able to expand, and that will require us doing something with the wastewater treatment plant. So that's my main focus right now.
All right, so that expansion for... And that's the industrial park, and sounds like the airport also is involved.
Yes.
Three River School District.
Correct.
Okay. Eventually, how do you see that transpiring, or if you could wave your magic wand, what would you like to see happen? And is it going to exclude the school district? Does that put them out of the loop completely? Are they going to be paying bills, or is the county going to be paying bills to the...
We haven't worked out all those little details, and that little come after we get a cost assessment on what it's going to take. We as a county will take that one wastewater treatment open. To understand that when these schools were built in a rural community, they had to have a way to handle their wastewater treatment. Now, Hidden Valley has its own system. North Valley has its own system. And Fleming has a system that takes care of Fleming and the grade school and the industrial park. So we're eventually working towards the county taking control of that and operation of that particular wastewater treatment plant, because the big challenge for us to expand at the industrial park is being able to get rid of that wastewater. So it's adding an element to that system that's not there now, and I don't understand the cost yet, and we haven't worked out the contractual details. But we're not going to leave the schools high and dry. They'll still get their service out of that system. Seeing as they're the ones that had that and operated, were kind enough to let the county tap into that system for years now.
All right. Well, certainly they need to have access to it. I guess my concern is who's going to be paying for it, who will have access to control. And I know all these questions are unanswerable right now. Plus, who's going to be paying for it? Of course, I guess eventually, it's the taxpayer's going to be paying for all of it, regardless if it's the county or the school district. It depends on whose budget it comes out of.
Well, we were actually approached by the school district because they simply do not want to operate that anymore because of the amount of wastewater that's going from the industrial park. So we're in the process of negotiations. We're in the process of finding out the cost, what additions need to be made to that system, and hopefully we can get those double-digit figures of jobs to come here to our community instead of going someplace else.
All right. With the industrial park, how much room for growth is there in terms of attracting more industry there?
Well, I think there's quite a few lots that are still empty over there, and I'd like to see them all filled out. In fact, in my campaign, that was one of my five-year goals, is to see the industrial park filled up, and that's really kind of what I'm focusing on right now.
All right. Does that all depend on the wastewater situation?
It depends on, well, we know, we pretty much know as a county that we're going to have to go out and seek some grant money somewhere to get that addition, to bring that water up to grade A, which will allow us, it really will help the schools too, because then they can take that wastewater, instead of using their well water, they can put that wastewater on their ball fields and keep them nice and green. And eventually we can add the airport into that. But right now my focus is, as a commissioner, we're very limited on where we can help businesses set up under our jurisdiction outside the city limits. The North Valley Industrial Park is one of those areas that we can do that in.
Is there no room right now for any business to move in because of that situation, or are there some vacancies that would be available?
Well, it's at capacity for inflow.
Okay. So right now the answer is no. Huh?
The answer is no, and that's why I'm so focused on this, to make sure we can get it done before those people come wanting to expand at the park.
All right. Well, that also will affect or could have an effect on the airport. So those two areas are certainly rooms for industrial growth within the county.
Yes. And that's we're going to get some big benefit out of additional runway at the airport. Also, I'll let you know that there is a grant money that's going to put in a fuel station at the Illinois Valley Airport, which is something they've never had. And when you're flying around, you want to look for places you can land to get fuel. So this should be a big boon for the Illinois Valley Airport to have a fuel system out there. That is coming. But to do more expansion at the park, this wastewater treatment plant is the key. And that's what I'm focusing on.
All right. So we're looking for that wastewater. That's something that we'll look forward to. And we don't have a timeline on when to expect those numbers to come in.
No, waiting for the engineer's report. And once we get an idea, it's not as bad as I thought it was going in, because I thought the problem may be very expensive, because there was some confusion about that whole system up there, not understanding that North Valley and Fleming were completely different systems. And so now we're more focused. We got better information. I'm working with the superintendent of maintenance and John, and we're working together to collaborate and get this thing done so we can have some growth in the North Valley Park.
All right. Once the engineer's numbers come back and you've got an estimate, and let's say that you've already got grants in order for that, do we have a time frame? How long would that take?
That's a good question.
I ask good questions.
Well, I know you do, but in that sense, it's fine. But that's a question I don't have an answer for, because until I see the engineer's report and get a dollar figure on that, and then line up some kind of grant money. We really can't seek grants until we know what we want to get granted the money for. So that's the key right now, is that engineer's report. And that's what we're waiting on. I'm waiting very anxiously to see that report.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll twiddle our thumbs until that comes in. In the meantime, you brought up the Illinois Valley Airport, too, with the new fuel station coming in there.
Yes.
That's great. I've heard, I'm not sure, news stories, what about nighttime viewing out of the Illinois Valley? Are you involved with that at all?
Nighttime viewing of what?
The skies.
No.
There are areas out there where there is no ambient light coming in. Yes. Therefore, it makes it very ideal for viewing the skies at night, whether it's for research or just enjoyment.
Yeah, and you know, I do know that, because I lived a lot of my life, adult life, in the Illinois Valley. In fact, my family's longtime residents of the Illinois Valley. So, yeah, there's some places out there where you get no ambient light and you get a good view of the sky. And that, I think it's wonderful, but I don't know is that just a group that gets together to look up?
I just picked it up. Let's see. I'll research that and get back to you.
Okay, thank you.
because I thought it was intriguing that something like that would be happening. And I was under the impression it was near the airport, but ambient light is still very, very dominant at the airport.
It might be, but I think that's been reduced because of the sawmill no longer in business out there, because there was a lot of nightlight at that airport. I mean, at the old sawmill out there. But I think that's there's something happening out there, too, that I'm trying to get involved in. A prominent businessman has purchased the old Rough and Ready sawmill site, and he has designs to do some more economic development out there. So I reached out to him. I haven't heard back from him. But we're going to get together and try to see what we can do to help him, too.
All right, so we don't know exactly what he's got planned to go in there yet, then.
Not at this time, I don't.
All right. Rollins, take another question right now. Has the commission been approached at all by the group wanting to purchase or lease the N Street property for a homeless encampment for the city?
Now, I want to make this perfectly clear. There has been no negotiations of any kind of lease for that N Street property.
So you had nobody's been approached there, at least on the county side.
No, I can't say we haven't been approached. We were presented in two different executive sessions, approached by a certain nonprofit that wanted a lease on that property. But we never even considered and never even talked about leasing that property. But there's been so much negative feedback on that. My personal opinion, what I've said in the meetings, is it's a poor location. And you could go on Google Earth and see that 650 feet away from Riverside Elementary School. It's right across the street from the largest apartment complex in the county. And I really think it's a poor location. It's on a very nasty curve there. And I want, if not pro, leasing that out for somebody for a homeless situation.
All right. So in that situation, you'd be dealing primarily with a nonprofit and not the city. Is that the way that would work?
The lease would be between a nonprofit and the county because it's county-owned property.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to make it perfectly clear. There has been no negotiations or talk of lease on that property. I just want to alleviate the fears of a lot of people in that neighborhood out there that the commissioners have not even discussed leasing that property for a homeless site. It's the farthest things from my mind right now, especially with the feedback we got from the community.
All right. Do you anticipate it being on a further agenda?
No, I do not. I don't anticipate that particular property. I'm sure the homeless, and we're trying to work with the city to find a adequate location. But nobody, I don't think anybody wants that in their neighborhood. I mean, that's because you look how many times the city's tried to find a property that would work for that situation, and every time the community around that site gets up in arms, and I can't blame them. But by the court case, the solution has to be within inside the city limits. We can't put it way out in the county on county-owned property. It has to be something inside the urban growth boundary of Grants Pass. So that makes it a little tough with the size of Grants Pass. If you ever Google Earth Grants Pass, look around for vacant land where you could put something like that. That's not in a residential neighborhood. It's pretty tough to find that in Grants Pass. Metro, a lot more land area.
To your knowledge, are there any county-owned lands within the urban growth boundary that would fit the needs for a homeless camp? If you could point to a direction, which way would you point?
I don't think there's county-owned property. I think there's privately owned property that could work for that. I've identified a couple of them by just taking time and spending time on Google Earth looking for lots of the right size. But most of those are in private hands. So I'm not happy with the situation they have going right now, having them right along 6th and 7th Street. I think it's a poor choice, but they had to do what they had to do. So, yeah, we're working with the city, trying to find some locations. There's been some people approach us, but there's nothing set in stone about a location yet.
All right, you say you're working right along with the city, and I get confused here why people are approaching you for a city problem. Jurisdiction seems to be strange right there.
Well, jurisdiction is strange, but you got to understand the counties, the cities inside the county, although, howbeit, they have their own jurisdiction, they have their own government. So we're not going to step on their toes. It is a city problem, but any city problem is going to be a county problem because the city's in the county.
Correct.
But we don't really have jurisdiction. The reason we were approached over that used to be the old evidence locker for the county sheriff. Mm-hmm. You know, he got a new evidence locker, so that property now becomes what we will call excess property.
It's surplus right now.
It's surplus property. I'm a big believer that we need to get rid of as much surplus property as we have and put it back on the tax rolls. So, but that's not in consideration for a homeless camp at this time, a homeless facility at this time.
Oh, well, in terms of getting that back on the tax rolls, is there any interest in development from an industrial standpoint or from a commercial standpoint?
Well, it's what it's called is considered a light industrial zone. So this would be a place you could put some good businesses, and it might be a good location for business. It's just recently come up to us that location. As soon as it became available, these nonprofits started looking at this location. We as a board have not discussed that. We have not made any decisions on what we're going to do with that property yet. These properties, we sell a lot of excess property, surplus property, and we want to kind of keep doing that. And there's some properties that will be coming up later on that we want to get rid of that aren't necessary for our forestry or really anything the county needs them for. So I'm looking forward to alleviating the county of that surplus property and putting it back on the tax rolls. But in street right now, there's no real decision on what we're going to do with that property.
All right. Still up for grabs?
Up for grabs, yeah.
So if you're looking for a good piece of property to run a business, ladies and gentlemen, give Ron Smith a call.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, and we'll be right back.
The Cartwright family.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress from the Board of County Commissioners. Commissioner Ron Smith has joined us today, and we've been talking about lots of things, primarily some industrial opportunities for the county and some ways to really enhance those situations. And just glancing at your agenda coming up this is for this afternoon, isn't it? Board of County Commissioners Tuesday workshop. He'll be talking about quitclaim deeds for some county real property and talking about real properties in relation to the sale of the Flying Lark. I was under the impression the sale for the Flying Lark was a done deal. Is it not? Or are we just finishing crossing T's and dotting I's?
It's a very unique and kind of bizarre situation. I don't want to go in complete details on this because we're still in the negotiations. But there is a 20-foot easement that runs across the parking lot.
Okay.
Across the parking lot. And this is kind of a bizarre situation. We're working to get control of that title to that 20-foot easement so that we can finalize the deal on the parking lot side of that sale to River Valley Church.
So I'm assuming that the YMCA is involved in that also.
Well, not really.
Really?
It really wouldn't hamper the YMCA at all. But it's just a bizarre situation that hit all the searches and all this development there. This thing never came up until recently, and now we're in a situation where we're working with owners of that easement to try to get that resolved so that we can finalize everything on the Flying Lark.
Is it a private entity or is it?
They're private entities.
It's a private entity, so it's not ODOT or anything. So.
No, it's, and I really can't go into a lot because we're going to be in the negotiations with these people and you don't want to spoil the pot. But it's something that needs to be done, and that's what we're working on. And that will finalize everything on the Flying Lark.
Okay, so the sale to River Valley Church is still basically a done deal.
It's a done deal. What's not done is the additional part of the parking lot because of this oddball, weird easement that runs, a 20-foot easement that runs across the parking lot.
Okay.
And I don't understand how we got to this point because all these years, it had a name, like a street, and we were under the pressure that it was a public easement. But it turns out that's not the case. So we're dealing with that. That'll be coming up on the agenda.
Okay, well, and that's on the agenda for this afternoon, 1:30 in the conference room in the courthouse.
Yes.
And I have a question for you because I've seen just basically a lot more of the work is being done in that workshop publicly as opposed to showing up on the business session on Thursdays.
Well,
is that a fair observation on my part?
Not necessarily a fair observation. When it's something that is not a big public issue, we try to take care of it in the workshops, administrative workshops. When it's something that the public needs to weigh in on, we want to bring it to the weekly business session to allow that public comment.
All right. Well, that brings the question, who decides? Who decides what will be done there and if the public needs to weigh in on it. And I know that conference room is fairly small, but the public is available, isn't it? It is available.
Yeah. They're allowed, when we do an administrative workshop or the open discussion in the conference room, the public's welcome to come. They're not allowed. There's no back and forth.
Okay. Yeah.
That's usually
there's no community involvement. They're there to observe.
Well, we usually have press there, mm-hmm. but most of this is dealing with county business. And in that process, we'll go through that agenda. Like some of the things you see on those agenda will probably be moved to the next weekly business session. Some of them will be taken care of right there in that administrative workshop.
Yeah, and it's a fairly long agenda this time, and that kind of surprised me here. I grabbed this thinking this was the Thursday agenda, but this is for this afternoon at 1:30 in the conference room at BCC. Let me run down a couple of things. Real properties in relation to the sale of the plot. Oh, flight that. Yeah, we figured that one out. The May 2026 primary election is on this agenda. Is that?
Well, we're looking at what we can do for advisory questions. That's the reason that's on. So we have a whole list of the advisory questions that have been asked by the public for the last 10 years. So we as a board will get together and discuss what advisory questions we should put out there so we can get the heartbeat and the understanding of what the majority of the community wants. That's the reason that's on that agenda.
You have some questions you want to put on there yourself?
Well, not at this moment. You know, if you look back to the history of that, it gives the commissioners a good understanding of where the public was at the time that question was asked. But then you don't know if that question asked today would have the same input if it did 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's still a little over 6 months away yet.
Yeah. So, but I really believe that advisory questions are very important. I mean, my philosophy as a commissioner is I'm here to serve the public. If I don't understand what the public is needing and wanting, how can I serve them? So my only opportunity, of course, my doors are open, my phone is open, and I do meet with people in my office, but not as many as I'd like to. And we do have the public comment period in the weekly business session. Other than that, how you can go out and you can talk to maybe, if you're really busy, you talk to a few dozen people in a day. But how do you really get the heartbeat and what people are looking for in a big, broad sweep of the county's opinion? And advisory questions are the best way to get that.
I had about three questions come out of that one. first of all, best way to reach you, and you said you meet with people in your office. Of course, that time is limited because there are just so many minutes in a day.
Right.
Second of all is, how about email?
Yeah, I get a lot of emails, and I try to. Here's one thing I made a commitment to when I went in office. I'm going to answer every call that I get. I'm going to answer every email I get, and I do that because I think if they're reaching out to you, they deserve to have an answer or at least a conversation with you.
All right. What about phone calls and personal situations? Are there any other way to contact you? What would you like to see happen?
I'd like to have more people come into my office and sit down and talk about their challenges and what they want to see. I believe that you get the government that you deserve. I mean, and if you're not participating in your government, don't expect them to be listening to you, because we don't know what they want until they come and talk to us. And I can go on what my own personal feelings are about certain issues within the county, but that doesn't tell me what the majority wants. So that majority of people coming to me. Now, we got overwhelming emails as far as that end street.
Oh, I'll bet you did.
Negative. Okay. And so that's a telling factor. And then there's been other issues, you know, like the library that we just got finished up. We got a tremendous amount of emails on that. And so other than getting emails and phone calls, this advisory question and comments on a weekly business session, this advisory question is a good way to get a good feel for what the majority of the county wants. So that's why that's on the agenda.
When you hit a situation like the library or this N Street property and you get dozens and dozens and dozens of emails, in those situations, is what you're getting mostly negative because the positive side is already there?
I think
you tend to hear more from the negative, don't you?
Well, it's a funny thing. And I'd said this in a weekly business session before. Get involved in your county, even if the issue isn't a hot button for you. Because what you tend to get is people that, for example, the library. Those people that were pro-library were very active and vocal, but those that were not were pretty silent. I had a few on that side. It's like this N Street property. A few that were for it, but the vast majority were against it. So it's...
All right. Let me jump in there. You heard from a vast amount of people negatively, but if they were for it, you don't know how many there were for it.
Exactly. So that would be an interesting question for an advisory question to get a broader idea. And that really, you know, you look at voter turnout sometimes, and you wonder how many people are actually involved in the government.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO, and we'll continue with more. But right now, we've got time for news.
Tired of the insurance?
Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us today. Phone lines are open if you have a question or comment for our guest today. County Commissioner Ron Smith is in studio. The number is 541-472-1270. When you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you air your question or comment directly to Commissioner Smith today. In the meantime, though, Commissioner, we've been talking a lot about community development and really bringing some more industry into the county of Grants Pass. We've talked about the industrial area in North Grants Pass and the airports. Are there any other areas that were possible for development, or is there a place where we can reach out and really begin to attract some more development in the city or in the county?
Well, I think there's opportunity at the Illinois Valley Airport. There is an economic empowerment zone, and you understand that they're self-supporting. There is an industrial park on the what would be the north end of the IV Airport out there. But it's been years and years and years trying to get this promoted, to get some industry in there. We know that we had in the past we had somebody want to manufacture drones out there in that industrial park. Well, the overwhelming majority of people, because it had the drones attached to it, were opposed to it. So he went someplace else. And then we know with Ericsson Aircrane, they wanted to go out there and use the airport for part of what they were doing, but then people said, well, too much noise. So it gets to be challenging to try to get something done at that airport. The fuel out there would be a big plus. And I think that the development in the old rough and ready sawmill is going to be a huge plus, because that's a large, I don't know how many acres that is. It's well over 500 acres of land out there that is zoned for industrial. So that's an opportunity for the Illinois Valley. I like to see more done for the valley. I got a kind of a soft spot there because I lived there the majority of my adult life, and I know the Illinois Valley very well, and they need it. We got three of the poorest zip codes in the state, and guess where they are? They're all in the Illinois Valley, and that's unfortunate because there's a lot of great people out there. So I like to see more done for them, and I'm going to try to reach out more and more to them to see where we can get them some more jobs out there.
It would take really the very, very specific industry or business to really go out there. And what I'm thinking about is transportation and access, particularly. They don't have real good access to I-5. They have to, once again, drive directly or either go east or west to the coast to get products out of there or get products in there. And I'm not sure that the airport there would really be sufficient for any larger aircraft for bringing supplies in or taking supplies out. Yeah. Is that a fair assessment?
I think that's a pretty fair assessment in that the remoteness, your main transportation line is 199. And most of the way, that's a two-lane highway. And so it does make it a little difficult. Years and years, I was part of the what they had, the CRT out there. And that was a small nonprofit that gave out small loans, $5,000 loan to businesses. And we handled out a lot of those loans at that time. But we had a community come to us and say, well, as far as the airport goes, we want anybody that comes out there, want it to be green, clean, no noise or no dust. And I thought, well, you just eliminated everything.
That really defines where it's at.
So it's going to take a lot of community involvement out there to get to a point where they're willing to accept some kind of business in this area without large protest. I mean, here's something that's coming up, and I'm sure you've seen this. The nickel mining company, the Canadian nickel mining company, that just staked thousands of claims all over Josephine County and Curry County. That's going to become an issue. If you understand the history of, say, $8 Mountain, for years and years and years, people, they've drilled that and tested that, and they know that there's chrome, cobalt, nickel, and some platinum group metals and a tiny bit of gold on that mountain. But because it is considered an area of critical environmental concern, which is kind of strange, there's probably going to be little development done as far as mineral development goes. Although we as a country do not have a mine that produces nickel at all. All the nickel we get is imported. When they shut down the Riddle nickel mine, that was the last producing nickel mine in the United States. And what people don't understand is, I like to tell people, Josephine County is the poorest little rich county in the West. And it's because we have tremendous mineral resources here. And actually, the history, the founding of this county was founded on mining, primarily gold mining. But during both World War I and World War II, we produced a vast amount of the chrome that was needed for the war effort. And today we have no large producing mines. And mining jobs are good jobs. And the thing that bothers me about this is that we have an element of society that says, no mining in my backyard. So they export this mining to countries that have no environmental regulations. So overall, they're really not helping the earth, because you go over in Africa and places like that that have these minerals, there's no environmental regulations. They're going to rape that earth and do whatever they want to it. But here, if we could bring that domestically and produce our domestic products, right, our domestic minerals right here, we have pretty stringent environmental regulations and a lot about reclaiming the land afterwards. So I would like to see something happen in that arena, because it creates good-paying jobs, but we have such an element here that says, no, we don't want to cut any trees, we don't want to dig any holes in the earth, and so you're limited on what you can do as far as natural resource production. But the amount of timber we're burning at today's rate, I believe we'd burn more acreage of timber in the last 20 years than we have ever logged. And I was very involved in the Biscuit Fire back in 2003, 500,000 acres burned. And there was a plan to go in and harvest those dead standing trees. Well, they had value. You got to get them within a year or two. After that, they're no value.
And they're still out there.
They're out there rotting. And I was told by one person in the federal agency, there was $1 trillion worth of dead standing timber left there to rot. And here's what I don't understand about those that don't want to cut trees. As a tree stands there and rots, it pollutes more than when it burns. Propane, methane, CO2 all come off a rotting tree. And when you take an area that's been burned and you don't harvest it, it does not get replanted. I've been out to Babyfoot Lake, and it's like a moonscape. You've got a 10-foot-tall brush and dead standing snags everywhere. That's just waiting for another lightning strike. I think we got to do better on managing these forests. Could be a big deal for the county if we could get some kind of production of lumber and minerals again in the county. That's my personal opinion. I've been involved in this stuff a long time.
Talking about minerals, and I've heard for years that we are rich in minerals, the rare earth minerals that you probably hear on a national newscast daily that the United States is really in need of. We've got them right here, and we can't mine them. And I'm not sure that how mining works, and maybe you can enlighten me, Ron. We're not talking about a big, huge, open pit mining like we see pictures in Africa of diamond mines that go deep into the earth and coal mines that have just a big hole in the ground. And I've seen that in Alaska. So is there a way to efficiently get these and still preserve some of our environment?
Oh, yes. Here's something that very few people understand. The serpentine ground that's in Josephine and Curry County is the second largest serpentine outcropping in the world. The largest tripping outcropping is in South Africa. This type of rock lends itself to chrome, cobalt, nickel, platinum.
Terillium?
Terillium's a small thing. Mm-hmm. It's generally not in the serpentine. It's in a gold. That usually is associated with gold. We have the minerals, but we don't have the right to use them. It's like I say, Joe, if we had more autonomy, more self-determination in Josephine County, we'd be rich. But because of the federal regulations, state regulations, environmental regulations, we're poor. And that's a shame. We shouldn't be poor.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. Stay tuned. We'll have more for you right after this message. Welcome back. Tuesday Talk Show in progress, ladies and gentlemen. Still time for a phone call. If you have a question or comment for our guest here, 541-472-1270. Commissioner Ron Smith is in here with us. And Ron, off air, we were talking a little bit about some of the things that could affect some of the industries that we've been talking about, in particular mining and forestry. Mm-hmm. And there are some executive orders coming out of the president's office that have yet to reach here, but could have an effect on what we've been talking about. Are you getting any help from our congressional delegation in that regard?
Well, I don't expect much help from Widener Merkley on those two, on those two issues, but I have talked to Cliff Bence's office about it. I'm in contact constantly with the BLM and Forest Service locally here, and even at Region 6 at the regional level. And those executive orders regarding timber and mining have not filtered their way down to the local level. So hopefully they'll get down here and they'll start to open up opportunities in those two areas. Here's something that people don't understand. Rural communities live and die by what they produce from the ground. And what I mean by that, if you're a New England fishing village and you lose the right to fish, you start to die. If you're an Appalachian coal mining community and you lose your right to coal mining, and we know the whole story behind all of Appalachia, you start to become a dying community. This is what we're seeing in Josephine County. When you lose the right to access that resource that you used to produce that gives industry in the large cities materials to work with, then you start to die. And we've seen it time and time again everywhere you go. And we've been going through this downslide in Josephine County since our timber receipts went away. And if we don't figure out something to find some way of replacing timber revenues, I don't see a real bright future for Josephine County.
All right. Well, I hate to hear that, but at the same time, when it comes to that, that means that sometimes people come together and figure out a way to overcome.
And that's really what we need to do. We need to figure out how take the moon complex fire that's burnt. It burnt 20,000 acres. It almost completely destroyed the Rogue Wilderness. But now we got a state rep coming from Curry County. He's petitioning the Forest Service, which is primarily Forest Service land, to harvest those dead trees in a timely manner where they have value. And if they did that, they replant that, and 20 years of have a nice-looking forest again. If they don't, is it going to have a moonscape like we got out there by the Calumet Alps and Babyfoot Lake? I hate to see that kind of our forest. I've got a mortality map, a tree mortality map in my office of Washington, Oregon. You would be shocked to see how many trees are dying in our forest. When a forest fire comes through an area and that doesn't get harvested, the bugs come in. And pretty soon the bugs are in the healthy forest all around it. And that's our big problem. We're losing our forest at an astounding rate. You want to talk about logging. I'm going to talk about fires and bug infestation that are destroying the forest, not logging. Logging's not destroying the forest. A managed piece of land is always more productive than a non-managed piece of land. I'm not saying we need to log everywhere, but there's certain places where we could grow trees forever. They're one truly renewable resource we have. And how many people you know live in a wooden house?
Most.
So where's the lumber coming from? You know, we're importing a tremendous amount of Canadian lumber, which may help the Canadian economy. In fact, we were importing a lot of Russian plywood out of Russia. See, so we're getting money out of, we're getting our resources from other countries. And we're exporting the environmental damage out of our country to these other foreign lands. And we're, we're, We're saving the planet? No, we're just putting it out in somebody else's backyard, not ours. Our backyard has a lot of environmental regulations. These other countries that we're getting these resources doesn't necessarily have that.
I mean, let me put a footnote in there that China's electricity is coming from primarily coal, and they're burning a lot of it.
Yeah, and they've built a lot of coal plants, but yet we're tearing down coal plants. Here's an interesting stat for you. Do you know the United States has 7/8 of the world's coal supply?
I'm not surprised.
7/8 of the world's coal supply. And yet we're going to abandon coal, even though they figured out how to make it burn clean. We're going to abandon coal, but Russia, China, India, all of these countries are building coal fire plants. So how is that really helping the overall environment, the worldwide environment? Oh, yeah, you don't see the smokestack here, but eventually it comes over here. The wind's bringing here. So it's really – it's kind of an odd thing that we have got such an attitude that poor Earth is being totally destroyed, but – the problem is, it is in countries that don't have environmental regulations. Why don't we produce these resources here where we have the regulations to make sure it's clean and the land gets reclaimed?
All right, Ron, we're coming down to our final 6 or 7 minutes. Actually, it's about 5 minutes right now. What do people need to take away from today's program and know about what's going on with the commissioner's office right now?
I think the biggest thing is get involved. Don't listen to all the hearsay and the rumors. Come talk directly to the commissioners. Get your answers from the horse, not from the other source. And I think that's one of the biggest problems we have is people are quick to jump on the rumors, but if they'll just do their due diligence, come talk to the board, do your research, you'll see it's not always what you think it is according to the rumors. So I'd like to see more people involved.
There are always two sides.
There's always two sides of every issue, and I like to hear both of them before I make a decision.
All right, once again, best way to reach you, Ron Smith?
Call the commissioner's office. Or you can email me. My email
4745221. Is that right? Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, and I have my email, and that's the best way to get it because I get in the office about 6:30 every morning, and that's the first thing I do. I look at my emails. My email is rsmith@josephinecounty.gov. Make sure you put .gov on there, but it's rsmith@josephinecounty.gov. Email me with your concerns, or email me with maybe say congratulations or a nice job.
Or how about an idea or two?
That's my suggestion. We hear an awful lot of complaining. We don't hear a lot of solutions. So I'm open to any solution that brings economic development to our county because when your economy sinks, then that's when the crimes and the drugs and the come into the community, the thefts. It's a history of declining communities that once you lose your basic economy, the next thing that comes is drugs, alcohol, crime, and look at the situation in Josephine County today.
All right. Ron, thank you very much for your participation today. We certainly appreciate your involvement and your ideas here on the Tuesday Talk Show.
Well, thank you very much, Chuck. I really appreciate KJO and what they do for the community and the service. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Okay, invite your cohorts along next time. I know you do. You're listening to KAJO 99.7 FM, 1270 on the AM band and streamed at KAJO.com. Want you to stay tuned for more coming your way, courtesy of our good friend Alex Bauer. We'll follow momentarily. You're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon.
988 Oregon.